who were their property, or in some cases considered family, would not someday turn on them again. This is the story that the writer-director Nate Parker sets out to tell in The Birth of a Nation. And in the movie Possession, playing Wednesday at 10 p.m., a woman starts exhibiting increasingly disturbing behavior after asking her husband for a divorce. Suspicions of infidelity soon give way to something much more sinister. For more information about times and dates, you can go to their website at www.arttheater.coop/full-schedule. This hour of programming on WEFT is sponsored by our community partner, Jets Pizza. Jets uses only premium ingredients, including dough made fresh daily. Jets Pizza stores are located at 512 South Neal Street in Champain. They're number 217-352-3333 and 1907 West Springfield Avenue. They're number 217-352-9992. You can order online at jetspizza.com. Disability Beat is also sponsored in part by our community partner, Attorney Baku Patel of Patel Law, who practices Social Security disability law and represents those who have been denied benefits. There are no fees unless Patel Law wins your case. You can contact Patel Law for a free consultation to discuss your Social Security disability case. Patel Law is located at 108 West University Avenue in Urbana, with offices in Danville and Decatur. For more information, visit patellawteam.com or call 217-384-1111. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat.
My name is Sarah and I'm from Smile Healthy. You're listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, community radio for East Central Illinois.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with James Thompson, a certified financial planner, on special needs trusts. But first, disability news for the week of October 10th, 2016, from Inclusion Daily Express and Disability Scoop. In an unusual move, dozens of disability advocacy groups say they're ready to line up against efforts in Congress to expand the Achieving a Better Life Experience, or ABLE Act, over concerns that the changes don't go far enough. More than 80 groups say they will oppose legislation that would enhance options for individuals with disabilities who are currently eligible for ABLE accounts. That is, they say, unless lawmakers also act to increase the eligibility age for the new savings vehicle. Under the ABLE Act, people with disabilities can establish special accounts where they can save up to $100,000 without jeopardizing Social Security and other government benefits. Medicaid eligibility is not affected by any levels of funds accrued in the accounts, but a provision added to the law before it was passed in 2014 limited such accounts to people with a disability that onset by age 26. Just last month, the U.S. Senate Committee on Finance approved two bills giving more flexibility to those who are already eligible for ABLE accounts. The ABLE to Work Act would allow people with disabilities who are employed to save additional money each year in their accounts, while the ABLE Financial Planning Act would let money saved for an individual with a disability in a 529 college savings plan be rolled over into an ABLE account. However, a third bill raising the eligibility age to 46 was left out of any discussion before the Senate committee, and that has many advocates feeling shortchanged. The last-minute addition of the age criteria led many people who had championed the ABLE Act for years to be left out, said Chris Rodriguez, a senior public policy advisor at the National Disability Institute and co-chair of the Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities Task Force on and financial security, which initiated the correspondence to lawmakers. Rodriguez said, quote, "It was the understanding of the disability community that the age concession would be addressed as soon as possible. We support the age adjustment being addressed before additional benefits are made available to those who are already eligible." End quote. To date, ABLE accounts are available through programs in 4 states. Florida's program offers accounts to residents of that state, while accounts created through programs in Nebraska, Ohio, and Tennessee are available to individuals nationwide. Another 15 states are expected to begin offering ABLE accounts by the end of this year, Weir said. The family of a mentally ill man killed by police in Sacramento, California, demanded last week that federal officials open a civil rights investigation and that murder charges be brought against a pair of officers who were caught on video trying to run over the man moments before fatally shooting him. The deadly encounter happened on July 11th, shortly after callers told 911 dispatchers that a man, later identified as Joseph Mann, age 50, who was homeless at the time, was acting erratically and had a gun in his possession. Officers, seeing he had a knife in his hand but no firearm, followed him for several blocks. Officers John Tennis and Randy Lozoya rushed to the scene to provide backup and within seconds of arriving said they would use their squad car to strike Mann, a move that bewildered experts in police use of force and sent outrage through parts of the community. In the dash cam footage, their patrol car barrels down the street. Tennis then says to Lozoya, quote, "I'm going to hit him," to which his partner responds, quote, "Okay, go for it, go for it," as their cruiser rushes toward Mann. As Mann runs across the street, one of the officers says, "We'll get him." Seconds later, they got out of the car, chase Mann on foot, and fire their duty pistols, striking him more than a dozen times. A new national ranking of developmental disability services finds states with top offerings coast to coast, but warns that a growing number of people are facing long waits for supports. According to a new report by United Cerebral Palsy, the best Medicaid service system for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities are found in Arizona, Vermont, New Hampshire, Michigan, and Hawaii. The annual report, entitled Case for Inclusion, names Arizona as the top state for the 5th year in a row. The analysis looks at a variety of data points to assess how people with disabilities live and participate in their communities, their ability to access supports, and how satisfied they are with their lives. The findings are based on the most recent data available, primarily from 2014. The report found that nationally, nearly 350,000 people are on waiting lists for community-based services and an additional 28,000 over the last year, though an increasing number of states, now 18 states total, have little or no wait. The analysis also found growth in the number of states allowing individuals to use self-directed services, providing family supports to a large number of residents, and placing at least a third of those with developmental disabilities in competitive employment. Some states, Arkansas, Illinois, Mississippi, and Texas, have consistently performed poorly in the ranking since 2007, the report notes. Montana rounded out the bottom 5 on the list this year. As in past years, top-performing states included those that are both big and small, rich and poor, high and low tax, as well as large and small spenders. States that ranked high did tend to lean Democratic, but 3 predominantly Republican states made the top 10. Said Taryn Bragdon, the author of the report, quote, "The fact is real progress is being made. More Americans with intellectual and developmental disabilities are living in the community rather than being isolated in large state institutions. But much more work needs to be done to reduce waiting lists, increase employment, and expand support to families. This annual ranking clearly shows the true picture of what's happening and what should be happening in the states for our friends and neighbors with intellectual and developmental disabilities," end quote. And finally, abuses at a Colorado Center for People with Severe Intellectual Disabilities included a resident performing a sexual act in exchange for a soda and another burned with a blow dryer in an attempt to raise her body temperature, according to a federal report. Federal investigators found that a group of men, some of whom were nonverbal, had words scratched into their skin, including die, kill, and I'm back. When questioned, three staffers said they believed the markings were the result of, quote, paranormal activity. Staffers had posted photos of the etchings on social media, the report said. The incidents of abuse occurred before November 2015, yet federal investigators who visited the home in April found safety protocols still lacking. They notified Colorado Medicaid officials in an August letter that they were enacting a moratorium on new residents at the center and that Colorado must repay millions of dollars in Medicaid funding. According to Stephanie Garcia, executive director of the ARC in Pueblo, Colorado, a nonprofit advocacy group for people with developmental disabilities, quote, "These are some of our most vulnerable people in Colorado. To read some of the things going on, it's shocking. It's much worse than we thought. It seems like every system of oversight failed. We should have checks and balances in place," end quote. And that's the news for this week.
Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
If there's something weird and it don't look good, who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
I ain't afraid of no ghosts. I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined by my guest on the phone today, James Thompson, who is a certified financial planner and is here to talk about special needs trusts and to hopefully answer questions about what that is, why it's important, and all the intricate things that people need to know about it, as much as you can squeeze in 20 minutes. Thanks for joining me today, James.
Thank you.
So why don't you start out by introducing yourself to the listeners and explain to them what you do and a little bit maybe about why you have decided to specialize in special needs trusts.
Okay, Vicki. First of all, Vicki alluded, I am a certified financial planner. I am also a chartered special needs consultant. That required first that I be a CFP, and then take some additional training, actually another 120 hours of classroom. I accomplished that, and the biggest thing I learned after doing that 120 hours was the more I knew, the more I need to know. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of work. But anyway, I work with West Point Financial Group. I got interested in special needs planning primarily because I'm legal guardian and raising my granddaughter, who is autistic, fairly high functioning, but it does require attending the IEP meetings and doing all those sort of things, and I needed to know more. So that's kind of where I came from as far as getting involved in the special needs trust and involved in special needs planning. We do a comprehensive plan with families to make certain that a financial future is available if it needs to be put into place.
So why don't we start by maybe you can give a little explanation of the difference between a will and what a special needs trust would do that would be different from that.
Okay. Basically, a will, first of all, again, when I have one more caveat, I'm not an attorney, so I'm not offering legal advice, but a will simply passes what you have to the next generation. Without regard to any specifics, any special needs, any special interests. a special needs trust is sometimes necessary, especially if the amount of money is going to be significant. Children that are and adults that do have a disability and are on supplemental social income, which is a needs-based program, cannot have more than $2,000 of assets in their own name. A special needs trust allows money to be put aside for the benefit of that child, and that's the key wording, the benefit of, and not in their ownership.
Mm-hmm. So how is this, I mean, people who have disabilities and get Medicaid for their health care and SSI for their support, how does a special needs trust protect those benefits?
Okay. Well, first of all, what it does is it gives them the necessary resources for their future. Because of federal laws and rules, as long as the money is for the benefit of, it can be used for any resource or any activity that doesn't pertain to Medicaid or the SSI, basic health care, basic needs. So it allows a continuation of the ability to enjoy life, I guess, is a good way of putting that.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be specially worded because there are a lot of caveats. They don't want to have any duplication or overlap in that need. But it does provide a continuation of that care beyond the need of beyond the death of the caregivers.
Okay. And so is this something that people could just, like oftentimes people would do wills, they'll find a form online and they can just fill out that form and they have a will. Is that something that is possible with a special needs trust, or is it more complex than that?
Well, it's definitely more complex than that. Give you an example. I'm a certified financial planner, and a major part of my studies to get that designation was on taxes. I don't do my own taxes.
Mm-hmm.
I hire a specialist to do that. Same way as when I take my granddaughter to the IEP meetings at the high school, I take an advocate. I have a probably more knowledge than a lot of people in sitting down in an IEP meeting, but I still feel that I need an expert to help me. And special needs trusts are so complex that you have to have an attorney that specializes in that area.
So what is the danger of trying to do this on your own? What's the risk that you would be taking?
Well, the biggest risk is that you might endanger and lose the government benefits, the SSI and the Medicaid, the needs-based program. Once you lose those benefits, you can't get back on, but it's very, very difficult. And I've heard stories where it takes not just a few days, but a few months in order to maintain that back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the biggest danger. The other thing is, if you have a special needs trust in play, and you have a grandparent or that would like to help the benefit of their child, it's just a much easier way to make sure that they're not making a mistake by being over generous.
Mm, and I know people who have done that. I have a friend whose husband passed away, and he left a boatload of a lot more than $2,000 to his son, who has developmental disabilities, and now they can get no Medicaid services for him until that money is gone.
Absolutely.
And that's a really awful thing. So what are the things that people need to think about when they're putting together a special needs trust? We had a conversation a couple days ago about a letter of intent. That's only, I know, a very small portion of what you do, but maybe talk about some of the big things that people need to consider.
Okay. The first thing in deciding whether or not a special needs trust should be used is it necessary?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a carte blanche thing that every attorney that works in the special needs arena is going to say, oh, yeah, you have to have a special needs trust. If there's not a lot of money available, it could be done in perhaps a simpler method. But a lot of times, especially these trusts, especially if you get involved in where you have families that have split apart, and both parents want to make sure their child's taken care of, continuation of child support beyond what's legally mandated, grandparents that want to give a gift currently, is the trust needed now, or is it needed you know, when the caregivers pass away. If no money is going to be put into a trust right away, an attorney can set up what's called a testamentary specialty trust, which is formed at your death. You know, how's it going to be used? When we sit down and work with the family, we like the entire family to be there, including grandparents, interested parties, if they so desire, so that everyone knows what's going on. What's the marital status, deciding when now, what resources may be available, not only right now, but in the future, i.e. pensions, life insurance, estates, and to make sure that the attorney has accomplished it in a fashion that the families would like to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it can be really complex, even in the decision-making process of whether or not to have a special needs trust. So now in the news this afternoon, there was a little bit of story on the ABLE account. So if a family is thinking about putting aside money for their adult child with a disability, an ABLE account is one option, I suppose. What are the differences between the typical special needs trust and what the requirements might be for an ABLE account? Is it the person who has an ABLE account, do they have to be, they have to have the ability to make all their own financial decisions, or is that something that's not required?
Well, first of all, state of Illinois, we haven't got all the rules finalized yet.
Well, that's true.
You do, with the ABLE account, you do have to, if you're going to be, if you're needs-based, in other words, SSI, you can have up to $100,000 in the child's name, actually, with the ABLE account. That's, a lot of families find that interesting, because, you know, a $2,000 limitation on a child's inheritance sometimes is a little bit hard to swallow. The ABLE account may have the opportunity to allow a little bit more money to be put in the child's name. The money in the ABLE account, my understanding, is still going to have to be used basically as the money in a special needs trust is going to be used. Special needs trust, I think, gives, probably because it can be worded the way that the clients would like it, a little more flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's the advantage is most of the time in a special needs trust, you're probably going to assign a fiduciary.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, somebody like a bank, you know, that's going to follow the rules of the trust as the family's mandated. When we sit down and talk with the family, the most important person in the family, of course, is the child with a disability, and then secondly, closely followed by the family and the rest of the family, to make certain that all parts of the family's desires are met. It gets down to the point, basically, I'm a technician.
Right, and so you're providing the information to families to help them through the process, but you would not actually complete a special needs trust, or how does that work exactly?
Okay, well, first of all, in my practice, if you're going to work with me, you have to work with an attorney, because I'm not one. An attorney is actually going to create the document, the special needs trust, as mandated by the family members, what they want to have done and accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
Within the guidelines of being legal, and most importantly, protecting the government benefits and providing the assets to be as they'd like. They're also going to direct how the money is distributed when the child does pass away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's going to happen now? You have to consider those things. Who's the trustee? Perhaps the co-trustee. What we do in my practice is we basically start the talking points, try to work together, try to use kind of a holistic approach with not only the family, but with the attorney and with us and perhaps the accountant, to make certain that everybody's on the same page more than anything else.
You know, it seems to me as I'm listening to this information, is that you're providing a really important service for working with attorneys who maybe don't know the ins and outs of special needs trusts. I know our family for sure, when we had our first one early on when our daughter was younger, that we were really, you know, at the mercy of an attorney that didn't really know what the heck he was doing. And now it's been fixed, but it, you know, when you get bad information to start with, it can really cause a problem.
The most important thing is when you're talking to an attorney or talking to a financial advisor like me, is pick one that you're comfortable with,
mm-hmm.
and be willing, just like, you know, walk away if you don't trust. We use several attorneys, because we think that they've been involved in the special needs arena for some time. I'm not the only person in downstate Illinois that can do special needs fine by any shape or form. But find somebody that you're comfortable with, somebody that's not going to immediately have one idea that's going to solve all your problems. there's usually not that. And find an attorney that has done that. I've seen, not that I'm an attorney, but extraordinarily vague wording on a special needs trust is probably a way to cause a lot of problems. I saw one where it just simply said, do not do anything that would disrupt any government benefits. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a short version of what the entire point is of having a special needs trust.
Right. So we only have a couple of minutes left, Jim. Is there anything that you wanted to bring up for discussion that we haven't had a chance to address?
Well, first of all, one of the things that I will be at this weekend, I'm going to be at the Disability Resource Expo there in Champaign.
Oh, great.
That runs from 9 to 2 on the 15th. It's at the Fluid Event Center.
Mm-hmm.
I will have a table there. I am one of the sponsors for that event. Be happy to talk to anybody that shows up. My contact information is very simple. I'm just jsthompson@financialguide.com. You can also look me up on our financial group website, which is westpointfinancialgroup.com. The most important thing is to remember that you as a family, you're the drivers. You're in charge, not I, not the attorney. We're simply going to help you determine how your family member can enjoy life to their fullest extent. And that's our desire and our goal. We offer what I do at no charge. We don't charge a fee if at some point in time in the future, if an alternative funding method is needed, then at that point in time, we talk about the available options. But you can walk away from us at any point in time that you'd like.
Well, thank you for all the information, and I'm sure that there is a lot of interest out there for people who maybe have been thinking about doing a special needs trust, but, you know, it's just one of those things that's kind of hard to get to. You think you're going to live forever. So I will see you at the Disability Resource Expo on Saturday, and hopefully a lot of our listeners will attend that great event as well. So thanks for being on the show today. James Thompson, financial planner for Special Needs Trusts.
Thank you much.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are podcast on our website at www.disabilitybeat.com, or go to Facebook and look for Disability Beat Radio. Please send your comments and show ideas for guests or topics to disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Hope you have a great week.